At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
We are live, SB Talk Sports, Sean Webb, Real Takes Over Fake Debates. It is Friday, Sean, a little early, but we here. How you feeling today, brother?
Doing good, SB. Happy Friday to you. Happy Friday, everyone out there.
Yeah, so we got a lot of things going on, especially in the football and basketball world at this moment. Now, someone could be good, someone could be bad, someone could be funny, but let's go ahead and start about something that happened recently. Giannis Antetokounmpo and the red-hot Milwaukee Bucks win the NBA Cup title. Sean, they didn't celebrate like they won an NBA championship. They congratulated, said they didn't pop no beers, no champagne, nothing like that. They got the dub, went undefeated. I think they said because Darvin Ham, you know, he got experience of this, you know, being the first ever coach to win. But he's the assistant coach. By the way, he's still undefeated in cup play. So they didn't celebrate. But my biggest thing, like, you know, the cup ain't still new. It really ain't really got this value yet that we can truly look at it how we want to look at it yet. I still think you need like a good 5 to 10, maybe honestly 10 years to us to truly start valuing it. Let's see if it actually stick. I hope it's not a thing where it's just like it was here for here, didn't go away. So then nobody would ever take it seriously. So I'm going to say for now, we're going to hold off on like what it means for the Bucks to get the title franchise. It don't matter today. The biggest question I want to know and talk about the Bucks winning is the Bucks started the season off cold. Everybody was questioning what the Bucks are going to do. They might need to make a move. They end up getting hot right now. Can the Milwaukee Bucks take this momentum off the cup to get back on track to win the NBA championship?
Can I answer that two ways, SB?
Yeah.
Can they? Sure. Will they? No.
Why not?
Because there's a team in the Eastern Conference that's clearly better than them. And it's the Boston Celtics. Oh. If the Celtics are healthy, they're not losing. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure if this Milwaukee team could beat Cleveland in a 7-game series.
I don't got them beating the Knicks. I'm giving a buck with you.
I think with the Knicks, it comes down to the use of the bench and the rotation during the playoffs. But, and honestly, and again, it's obviously very early to say, but Orlando is a very, very interesting team to me because defensively, they're the best team in the East defensively. And when they get Paolo and they get Franz back, the way they've been able to kind of use, you know, this time with those two guys out to help develop some of their younger talent, mm-hmm. their rotation, they're going to be really very much mm-hmm. a problem, I believe. So mm-hmm. can Milwaukee? Sure. Will they? No. I think this team kind of is what it is. I think it requires – too often that Giannis and Dame play out of their minds. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly, you know, getting Middleton back has probably helped some.
Yeah. Which he out again with an illness, by the way, too.
Yeah. So, you know, so I just think it's not a function of, oh, Giannis and Dame aren't great players. We know they are. I think it's a function of, I think there's just teams in the East that are just better and yeah. better built to go on a run and to beat, you know, a lot of teams in a 7-game series. So for me, I would say it's a no. I think you got to give them some credit because, again, as you mentioned as earlier, SB, they started out the season really well. They started the season 2-8. Mm-hmm. It looked like it was going to be a disaster of a season, and they have been able to at least put themselves, you know, back in the conversation, which, again, when you start out 2-8 in an 82-game season, the world's not lost, right? You know, it's a long season, you know, which is why I don't know why people get so crazy about where they are in the standings in November. It's November.
It don't matter.
It's don't November.
Matter. Don't matter.
You know,
I've seen teams before the season, they was like the number one seed. By the end of the season, they was a lottery seed. They was fighting for the number one pick.
I don't go crazy over the standings right now. I think it's way too early. We're only a little over a quarter away through the season, and there's a lot of season left. And you know, we'll see where things play out. But I just think Milwaukee certainly probably, you know, I think they're a playoff team, but much more than that, I don't see it, honestly.
To answer the question of can they take the NBA Cup Heat, no pun intended to your Miami Heat when I say this, but can the Milwaukee Bucks move this momentum from out the NBA Cup to win the NBA championship? I'm going to say no. And the reason why, because you alluded to one thing that you just said. They are too dependent on Dame and Giannis to win. If Dame and Giannis don't have a good game, not if one or the other, if one of them have an off game, it's going to be a very hard time for them to win the game. They both have to go off for them to win, especially in the playoffs. Now, I know during the season, before anybody see this and be like, oh, we seen them win games. In a regular season, you can sneak a couple games off. But in a playoff setting, when teams game plan for you and have different schemes and different formats to stop you as a player or make it tough for you as a player, that's when the others come into play. That's when your role players come into play. That's when the guys off the bench, that you need one of those games. I cannot fully trust nobody else on that team to consistently have a good game. And Middleton, it has not been healthy all this year. So from their points along, where they're too dependent on two guys. And like you lose, who got Boston, you got Cleveland, you got the New York Knicks. That's a recipe for disaster if you play any one of those teams. So I don't think so. Shout out to them for winning the NBA Cup, by the way. And also, Sean, too, I know I was alluding to like when the NBA Cup would get its value, where truly people like it. I think when a team wins the Cup and wins the NBA championship, I think that's when it's like, all right, it's going to kind of start hitting for that. But I brought up the Knicks, right? And I wanted to bring up the Knicks because we got to talk about Karl Anthony Towns, the Big Bodega, Big Cat. I don't know if you got used to the Big Bodega nickname yet. Like it or no?
Never will. Never will.
I think that nickname hard. I'm sorry, the Big Bodega, because, you know, the cats being, it's just New York. New York, hey, you know, New York, you know I rock with y'all. You know, I know. I get it. But Cat went back to Minnesota. Obviously, it has been things going on where people are trying to figure out, like, why they can't get traded, you know, money, you could say whatever. But people feel like Minnesota made a mistake, whatever. You know, usually when you come back home, people get nervous, butterflies. Cat wasn't nervous, dog. Cat wasn't nervous. He got his tribute video, and he turned the cat eyes on and went rage mode. Karl Anthony Towns dropped. Sean, this man went off on him. Dropped 32 points. 32 points, 20 rebounds, 6 assists, went 5 for 5 for 3, 10 for 12 from the field. We got to talk about that 5 for 5 for 3 in a second. But let's get to this point. What made Cat go off? Was this trying to make a statement game? And did the Minnesota Timberwolves make a mistake by trading Cat?
I mean, certainly there's a little bit of something there when you go back and you play a former team, mm-hmm. right? Particularly if that team traded you, or because, again, them trading you, the guys are going to use any possible thing they can view as a slight or mm-hmm. anything to say, yes, you know, this is why I should still be here and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I think Cat understood the business side of it. And again, Cat went to a very good situation, you know, with the Knicks coming off the run they were on last year, you know, in the playoffs. So I don't think, you know, there was a lot of, there wasn't any anger or anything like that, but certainly you want to show people what they miss. Mm-hmm. And he had a tremendous game last night. I mean, a mm-hmm. tremendous game last night. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do it. You know, he had 32. He only took 12 shots.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like he was going out there jacking up shots. He also had 20 rebounds. You know, he was all over the place. He was all over the floor. Again, he had a tremendous game last night. Shout out to Mikal Bridges, who had a really good game mm-hmm. last night as well. But, yep. you know, it was – one of those things where it's like, hey, listen, I just want to show y'all what you're missing. And he did. And
also, you know, Sean, I'm not doing no hot take. You know, I'll do hot takes. Like, I mean, I just say, like you said, real takes on face to face. We going to say how we feel about coming behind with facts with it. If Cat was any other player, we would be heavily talking about him in the MVP conversation. The last three games alone, Sean, he has been going off. He had nothing less than 19 rebounds his last three games. This is his second 20-rebound game back-to-back. He's averaging 25 and 14 and shooting 53% from the field, 46% from three, and the Knicks are winning. If he wasn't Karl-Anthony Towns, we'd be talking about him crazy. Karl-Anthony Towns, I'm not saying he is the MVP, but Karl-Anthony Towns should be in the MVP conversation, no question, and it's not getting talked about enough for me. And especially when he in New York doing this, I don't understand that. Like, how is nobody like talking? If Anthony Davis was doing this right now, and no, shout out to AD, he from the city, but they would be gaslighting this like crazy. But ain't nobody really talking about Cat because you know they always make fun of Cat, call it Cat Salt and all that. Put respect on Cat, man. That's all I'm asking to put respect on Cat. Cat should be in the MVP conversation.
So, SBA, you know, my general rule about the MVP is I think a previous playoff run helps push you and funnel you that following season into the MVP mm-hmm. conversation even more. Cat didn't have a great playoff run, particularly in that mm-hmm. Western Conference Finals last year. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of it. I just don't think he's having a very good season.
He going off.
He's having a very good season. Now, here's the catch. Can you do this come playoff time? Because I think the Knicks didn't make this move just for this was not a regular season move for the Knicks. This was a, hey, we think this puts us in the conversation with Boston in the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. You know, where does it put them against Cleveland? You know, because we have to talk about Cleveland in that conversation now as well. Yep. That's why the Knicks made this move. So for as impressive of a regular season that Cat is having, and he is having a really impressive regular season, I got to see it in May and June. And no, that's where it comes down to. And I think that's where, for a lot of people, it comes down to him at this point, you know.
No, and I can understand that. I can definitely agree with you on that. But from the point, this is Cat. I think this is Cat statistically so far his best season of his career. In the month of December alone, Sean, he pretty much averaged in 2020. I'm looking at the numbers right now. Like, and this the only thing I just asked. That's the only thing I asked. I didn't listen to people talk hoops from every type of department because I'm more than the mainstream because I already know the mainstream. It's crazy how Stephen A. not gaslighting him. He doing this on the Knicks. He gaslight everything else. I don't know why he not gaslighting him, but I don't really pay attention to the mainstream too much like that, so they don't count. I'm just talking about like even around all platforms, I'm not hearing it enough. That's all I'm asking for. But also, Cat went 5 for 5 for 3. Cat made a statement a long time ago, I think it was like a couple years ago, Sean, where he said he is the greatest shooting big man of all time. Now, everybody in the world, if you say you didn't, you're capping. Everybody in the world laughed at Cat, including me. But Sean, the more Cat hoops, not even just this year, it was like even like last year before then. I'm not laughing no more. I'm not laughing. He legitimately deserves to be in that conversation. Now, is he the greatest? Maybe not, but he's 100% in that conversation. Is it how we reacted when he said it? I don't think we should, but this part of the problem I said with like Cat, people don't give Cat the respect he deserves because Cat is cold. He's a very skilled basketball player, but how Cat demeanor is and how he's like laid back. And some people try to look at him like, Saul, if you don't make jokes about the voice and all, how they look at Cat, they don't try to get Cat his respect that he truly deserves. That's why part of the reason why we probably laugh Cat off, even though he's body of work wise and skill wise, you can see him being in that conversation. But I can say legitimately today, I'm not laughing no more. Cat is deserving to be in that conversation.
Certainly, I think he's deserving to be in the conversation. That's be, I think where it gets interesting again is what are the parameters we're talking about? Because again, when I think about the greatest shooting big man of all time, the first name that comes to mind for me is Dirk Nowitzki. And it wasn't just Dirk's shooting ability. It was coupled with the fact that he could do it off the dribble. He could do it in the post. He could, you know, there wasn't too many places where Dirk couldn't shoot. But also, I think when we talk about shooting, obviously the big delineator now is the three-point shot, particularly the volume with which guys are taking the three-point shot. So there were great shooting big men prior to the three-point shot being in the NBA. But also, again, the expectation was from big men, a big man might have had the skill set, but that's not what the game was, so he couldn't necessarily show that off in a game. A big man might be able to handle the ball. He could run your offense, you know, and there was a time where the basketball didn't allow that. No, you're a big man, you get the rebound, you find a guard, you know, and then you get up the floor. You know, so that was the game. Now, obviously, we're getting to see more guys use their skill sets. So when you talk about great shooting big man, Cat, I think certainly is in the conversation. Again, I don't know if Cat's never been a guy who necessarily did it off the dribble like Dirk. I'm not saying he can't. It's just that that's not necessarily something he did. And again, a lot of times you say the greatest ever. The reason why we say Steph is the greatest shooter ever, part because he does it off the dribble, but part because we've seen him do it at the highest levels. Mm-hmm. And it helped his team win. Mm-hmm. We can't necessarily say that with Cat at this juncture at the highest level. So that's where I think when people laughed at it, it's like, okay, cool. What does it help your team do? You know, what does that really mean? So, you know, but certainly I think if there's just a general conversation about it, he's absolutely in the conversation. But
I can see like Dirk, because there's a lot of great shooting big men. I know we was going through like a list a little bit before. There's a lot of great big man that can shoot from time being from like the time of during the league. It's kind of like looking at them. Like you said, I can see like you what we got to get to a point where we can break down a criteria for what are we using for it when you say you're the best shooting big man. I think we can one of these days go down and break down that criteria, then we can maybe do a would you rather or who is better from this criteria that we'd have made about who's the greatest shooting big man. Because I think we need to get more of that conversation. Because I'm looking at, remember we was looking at the list of names. We got like the Barnyanis. We saw Rasheed Wallace. You talk about like KG, LaMarcus Aldridge, because not necessarily when you say greatest shooting, because I got to go back to his statement too, because I want to make sure was it just shooting? Was it 3-point shooting? I want to hear the exact statement again. And Shad, I would definitely love to go back and let's make a criteria for it. And then let's make a list from there based off that criteria and then see what it do. Next story on the list, because criteria is very valued. You know what else is very valued? Your team. The Warriors have just been crowned the highest value team in the NBA. The current list goes as follows for everybody listening. The Golden State Warriors at $9.14 billion. Number two, the New York Knicks, $8.3 billion. Next one is the Lakers at $8.07 billion. Number four is the Brooklyn Nets at $5.7 billion. Next is the Clippers at number five at $5.68 billion. Then rest is the Celtics at six, the Chicago Bulls at seven, the Miami Heat at eight, the Houston Rockets at nine, and the Toronto Raptors at 10. I know a lot of people used to probably seeing that like the Bulls, the Lakers, and the Celtics being at the top of the list. When you look at how it went. No team lost value. No team lost value. Just a lot of other teams gained more than the next team, like the Brooklyn Nets and the Los Angeles Clippers skyrocket over the Celtics, Bulls, and the Heat. So, Sean, what can you, first of all, with the Warriors being the highest, dude, this is crazy. And you go have to, I'm because Steph is a huge part of this. Things like this, because the business side does matter too. When it comes to talk about a player greatness and what you also have done, we gonna have to really start talking about Steph differently and in a whole different light. But also, what's your reaction to the Warriors being number one? And then two, for the people who listening, can you explain why certain teams are higher? Because now you got a guy like me, or you got like the Boston Celtics fans confused that the Clippers and the Brooklyn Nets are higher value than those teams, and they ain't probably got no championship. They ain't looking at the business side. They ain't got no championship resume. We got the most championships. How are we not value? So can you explain to the people who might get a little confused on that?
Right. So a couple things, SB. So part of the evaluation and the assessment of that creates the valuation is includes the ownerships, real estate, and team-related businesses such as WNBA franchises. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you have businesses off of your franchise, that factors in that factors in evaluation. Also, do you control your venue? So if you control your venue, meaning you are the one who funded it, built it, and then you're bringing in different things that, are moneymakers for that venue, that factors in as well. So all of those things are part of the valuation of the franchises. Why this is a big deal is everybody knows probably the next big project for the NBA, minus trying to fix some of the game issues and the viewership issues, is looking at expansion, which, again, is not going to happen overnight. There are some things that have to be worked out before we get to the point where the league says, okay, yes, we're ready to now start seriously looking at expansion. Namely, Minnesota's situation needs to be fixed in terms of their ownership. What's that? When's that going to be done? Because I think right now it's in litigation. And Boston, who, you know, Whit Grosbeck did mention a few months ago that they were in the process of evaluating that team for sale. It's not going to happen overnight. He said, but he said 2028, I think, is the target for sale. So that's the thing. But when you talk about expansion, obviously these potential ownership groups have to be able to pay this expansion fee. Well, part of the valuation for what that expansion fee is what did the last team that sold, how much did they sell for, and what's the evaluation of NBA teams. So the average team is at about $4.6 billion right now, with, again, the Warriors being the high team. I believe Memphis is lowest at just over $3 billion. Mm-hmm. And where's that continue to skyrocket? Because the value of every team has gone up and continues to go up. Mm-hmm. Where's that going to be when it's time for expansion purposes? So there's a lot of different, you know, things that factor in and why this is important. But, you know, it also says if you bought an NBA team, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you got a great return on investment.
Oh, yeah. Steve Ballmer investment probably going crazy right now. He put a lot of money in there, but he can get it back.
And he's an interesting case, SB, because he bought the Clippers for $2 billion roughly 10 years ago. And also now he's built this new arena, which he self-funded. All of those things are going to factor into the valuation of the Clippers.
How much you say you bought it for right now? How much you say you bought it for back then? $2
billion? It was $2
billion. Right now they're valued at $5.6 billion. So he already doubled his investment already. So he going to be fine. And if he ever want to let the Clippers go, by the time he let the Clippers go, he going to probably quadruple his money for sure. Right. If he ever
sell the Clippers. Easily, yes. Easily. So, yeah, so that's the thing. It's that, you know, when you talk about, again, expansion in particular, these groups that want to get into the NBA game in these markets where they believe NBA basketball will succeed and thrive, you're gonna have to come with some deep pockets. So you know, that's the thing, right? You know, when you look at again, just a team, the Phoenix Suns, they were the last team, I believe, that it was Milwaukee, but I think Milwaukee, Phoenix and Milwaukee were the last two teams that got new ownership. Mm-hmm. Those ownership groups are seeing return on their investment, even though those purchases were made within the last, you know, couple of years. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think it truly factors in. And again, we're going to see expansion, I believe, by the end of the decade. But, you know, what that cost is going to be very interesting. And again, I would expect it to be no less between $5 and $6 billion per franchise.
Yeah,
coming into the NBA, I would be surprised if it were less than $6 billion.
Do you think the NBA will ever run into a problem where, like, the teams are getting too valuable, where it's going to be harder to sell teams? Because it ain't that. And a lot of, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of rich people in this world, but it ain't a lot of people just got like $5 billion who want to just spend it on a team. So would that become a problem in the future, maybe?
No, not necessarily. I think, particularly because I think the NBA has talked openly about being more willing to listen to ownership groups outside of the U.S., for example. So, and I'm not to pick on a particular, but like Saudi Arabia is a great example. There's some very, very wealthy, you know, folks who love sports and want to be in the sports business in Saudi Arabia. I think there's going to be more of an interest in listening to that, you know, someone like Jeff Bezos, who's worth, you know, a lot of money. There's talk that he could be potentially in the interested in buying the Celtics. I think my belief is more his just probably gonna be more in that expansion team in Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, just because of, you know, where Amazon is, you know, largely based and things of that nature. So all of those things factor in, you know, to it. So the higher the value just means, listen, if you want to buy an NBA team, just like with an NFL team, a little different, but with any of these teams, you have to come with some really deep pockets. And it generally won't be just one person, because a lot of times one person may say, hey, I'm going to, you know, put up a percentage, a large percentage of this, but I'm also going to have an ownership group. And that's where a lot of these teams are now, is, you know, having an ownership group and one majority owner, but having an ownership group.
I think the top teams, I'm looking at the top five, they already, they got the Warriors owned by one person. The
Knicks. Two. Yeah, they're co owned. Yeah. Joe Lacob and what's my other guy? Joe Lacob and, man, I'm sorry. Joe Lacob is the one who's kind of out front. Most
I was saying
Peter Goober. I'm sorry.
There you go.
Peter Goober.
The Knicks got one owner. They still got that same guy.
Yeah, but they have minority owners.
The Lakers got minority owners too, right? Or is it just Jenny?
So the Lakers are owned by
the Buss family.
Family trust, but they do have general investors or small people who may own a small, very small percentage of that team.
And then the Nets, because the Nets just so recently, they got that one guy, right? I think he's like
Joe Tsai. But yeah, but again, very few of these teams are generally outright owned by one person. An ownership group.
Because even the Clippers, even though I know Steve Ballmer, but I know he probably got like minority owners too.
Yeah, generally they all do, because again, it's, you know, you just want to maintain control of the team. Right. Mm-hmm. Which, again, you have to just own a certain percentage of the team to be the majority owner or the managing or the governor of that team. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's how it always is.
Okay. All right, Sean, we talk about team value. We got to go into player value, because the nominees for the 2025 Basketball Hall of Fame was announced. Some of the lead names or notable first-time people on the ballot: Carmelo Anthony, Dwight Howard, Sue Bird, Billy Donovan, Mark Gasol, Maya Moore, Amari Stoudemire, Lisa Boulder. I think I said Billy Donovan, not Billy Donovan. Who else am I missing? Mark Few. Who else am I missing? Oh, Mickey Arison, and that's it for the notable first-timers. Obviously, we still have other names on the list that could be, that's not first-timers. Like, Rick Barnes, the 2008 United States Olympic team is on this list too. But other names that's not first timers that's on the list: Penny Hardaway, Robert Horry, Bill Laimbeer, Sean Merriam, Doc Rivers, just to name a few. What do you think about this Hall of Fame class? And if you had the least pick three locks, who would your three locks guaranteed be?
If I had to pick three locks?
Three locks that you go, just know for sure gonna get in.
I would say my three locks would be Carmelo Anthony, Sue Bird, and Maya Moore.
Maya Moore, okay.
Those would be my three locks.
That's a good three locks.
Yeah.
My three locks would probably go Carmelo for sure, Dwight Howard, and Maya Moore. I ain't want to pick the same ones you pick because I think Dwight's gonna get in because you ain't gonna have the politics of why he didn't get picked top 75 gonna stop him in the Hall of Fame.
So the question for me with Dwight is Dwight, I don't believe, has officially announced his retirement. If I'm not mistaken. I don't believe he officially announced his retirement.
So if you don't officially announce your retirement, you can't get in even if they put you on the ballot?
So generally speaking, it's kind of the unspoken rule is you have to be a certain number of years out before you're eligible to be a nominee, right? Mm-hmm. It's 4 years for players. And so not having played an NBA game in the last 4 years, I think is why Dwight is among the first time nominees. But as I recall, I don't think he's officially announced his retirement. So, because what they generally don't want is you get in the Hall of Fame and then you say, hey, well, yeah, I'm going to come back and play.
Right. Because I don't think no player ever done that before. Any player was in the Hall of Fame and then came back and play or try to play?
Not to my knowledge, unless it happened many, many moons ago, but not to my knowledge.
That'd be crazy trying to be the first. Yeah, but it also said for this report, Dwight Howard has not announced his retirement.
Yeah.
Because the title of the report is, and I'm not going to read the report from Sports Key. The title was literally said, Dwight made a quote, said, I'm not retired yet, but he was talking about him being nominated. So that could probably stop Dwight then. But I think, like, Dwight, I get why he probably still want to play because he's – Dwight Howard is always in great shape. But, yeah, no, I think he needs to go ahead take his chance and get into the Hall of Fame now. I don't think nobody's going to take a chance on him now after you've been out the league for, like, 4 years. If you ain't get it in within, like, the last two years when you were sitting down, you probably ain't going to get in. But I understand it's, like, a problem with, like, anybody who's been doing something for a long time in their life. It's hard to just, like, oh, yeah, just give up on something. So I understand it. But this Hall of Fame class, though, it got a lot of names on it. And I know a lot of people seen Billy Donovan on there, who's currently the coach of the Bulls. Billy Donovan's on his list because what he did at Florida. The court is named the Billy Donovan Court in Florida for the reason with the Gators. So don't compare Billy Donovan's tenure with the Bulls to why he's on his list. But what you think about this Hall of Fame class in general, though, Sean, you think it's going to be a good one?
I think it'll be a pretty good one. I think, again, what will be interesting is those who, you know, we got quite a few first-time nominees. You know, how will the voters balance the first-time nominees with those who have been waiting or those who might have been finalists, you know, previous years who have been really close but obviously haven't gotten in yet? That's always the interesting kind of, I think, dichotomy of a Hall of Fame class in any sport, but particularly when you talk about the pro basketball or the basketball Hall of Fame is, you know, how many first-time nominees – that we say without question a first ballot. Because again, I think, and again, I'm not a big, oh, you got in first ballot, that validates your career.
No, Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer.
Hall of Fame, Hall of Famer. And again, at the end of the day, you don't generally decide what ballot you go in on. That's up to the voters. So I think that's what's going to be interesting is the split between the two. Again, Dwight is the interesting one because again, as you mentioned earlier, SB, he hasn't formally announced his retirement from basketball. So I think there may be some who say, well, until he formally retires, I'm not going to vote for him to go in. when there are others who have been waiting for some time.
And then would it be like, so with him not retiring, would that still take away from his first ballot chance since he's on there? So now, say if like 2 years later he retired, then they put him in. So since he's already been on this list, he won't be labeled a first ballot Hall of Famer, right?
Technically, yes. Yeah, he would not be because, again, first-time nominees are considered – to get in are considered first ballot mm-hmm. Hall of Famers. I almost hate the term first ballot Hall of Famer because I think it almost disrespects those who didn't get in on the first ballot. But, you know.
Yeah, I was looking at like the most players taken. I think they said 2024 had the most people, it was 13.
Yeah.
So it's, but I'm looking at like so many, they usually go from like the eight-ish range, eight to like 10, 12 range. So it's like a good 10 people. So if they keep it like that, and I'm looking at like all these names on this list, a lot of these, some of these first ballots going to get in. Especially Carmelo Anthony, because I know a lot of people try. We got to remember, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. And when you talk about a basketball career, Carmelo Anthony had one of the best basketball careers ever. College, yeah. First year, Syracuse, win. NBA, one of the best scorers all time in the NBA. Go overseas for the Olympics, one of the best Olympic players of all time. So yeah, when you talk about basketball, Carmelo Anthony is great, and we can definitely say that Melo is going to get it. Oh, we got to go to some football, Sean. So my Chargers played, got a tough, well-needed win over the Denver Broncos, division rivals. Shout out that. Let's go. Go Chargers balled up because we needed that win when it comes to the playoff race right now. And I think we just secured ourselves a playoff spot with this win for sure. And we're going to be a higher seed. I hate to see who we have to play. But that's not the part that I'm interested about in this game. It was at one point in time in this game where the Broncos punt the ball. The Chargers call for a fair catch. Somebody ends up running to the returner. You know that's a penalty. So we get the penalty on the yardage. It was the end of the half. So you think of Hail Mary. Mr. Harbaugh says, no, I know a rule in the book called the free kick fair catch rule. I never heard of it, never seen it before. But first of all, thank God we got a coach who knows his job. That's the first thing when I see this, during like the debacle of understanding what was going on. We get a free kick. The free fair kick is like you just pretty much, nobody's in front of you, just get to kick it. Dicker the kicker drills the kick. We get a free 3 points. Have you ever seen this before? I did not know. Man, I'm a sports guy heavy, but I can admit when I don't know nothing of what's going on, I did not know this was a rule. I have never seen this a day in my life. But shout out to Harbaugh, by the way. And then we end up getting that dub too. But can you explain this fair catch kick to me? Because I'm confused.
I mean, SB, you really explained it perfectly. Essentially, what it does, obviously, the team kicks the ball off, or the team has the right after, if they call a fair catch, to attempt a free kick from the location of that fair mm-hmm. catch. Now, again, where it gets dicey is obviously there was a penalty there, so it moved the ball up, I believe, 15 yards because I can't think it was a roughing penalty, which put the Chargers in field goal range, but again, field goal range with the ability to use the free kick rule mm-hmm. and took advantage of it. And obviously, you know, it was a big mm-hmm. 3 points, you know, given how, you know, the game was going. So it's not something you see often. I think the last time it was done was 1978, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you see often in the NFL, you know, and yeah, it's no 1976.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was definitely something that, you know, you had to really know the rule. But yeah, it's, and to be clear, they're the first to have made it since 1976. I'm not sure the last time it was attempted. But definitely the first to have made it since 1976.
I was confused, but I see. Now, Sean, I'm just saying, you know, it's a copycat league. And we didn't see it happen. I guarantee if it's a chance happens again, it might happen. I know the positioning of the football would matter, and usually when you punch, it's very far away. All I'm saying, though, Sean, in this day and age, from a free kick perspective where nobody's blocking at you, some of these kickers kicking in 70-some yards far away. So I'm just saying, don't ever be surprised one day you see somebody kicking for like 69, 70 yards from a free kick if it's a possible chance. I'm just saying, you look up Destroyer video. You ever see the YouTube of Destroyer? He was kicking it from 80 yards from a free kick. So I can see it happen. But shout out Harbaugh, by the way. A good dub by the Chargers because it's definitely needed. And we're looking at the playoff race right now. I'm thinking, honestly, that the AFC is pretty much set. I think now we're just fighting for seeding when it comes to the teams because you got the Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, Texans all clinched their spot. The last three teams is the Baltimore Ravens, who are 9-5, the Chargers, the number 6, who is 9-6, and the Denver Broncos, who was 9-6, and now they hit the 7th seed because the Chargers got the tiebreaker. I think we swept them this season. I think the Broncos didn't beat us. We swept them this season. So the Broncos are going to be the 7th seed. Then after that, it's the Colts. It's the Colts at 6-8, Dolphins at 6-8, Bengals at 6-8. And it's just literally the Ravens. And I don't think it's – how many games left to the season?
For most teams, but 2 left for the Chargers and Broncos since they played last night.
Yeah, it's pretty much solidified. They're just fighting for a seeding right now. And the NFC is a little different. It's still a little close race, but I think the AFC is definitely set and locked. Speaking of the NFC and trying to get something on lock, the Eagles are chasing down the real, real injured beat. The injury bug, the injury bug has affected the Detroit Lions. And one of the players that they have got, shout out David Montgomery, we thought he was going to be out for the season. He has opted out to not do season-ending surgery, and he's going to go through therapy and hopefully be back during the postseason. I think this is a big W for the Lions, by the way. Also, David Montgomery, you know, if you can do it, you know, it's football. Go out there and play, but don't force it and get a chance to, like, ruin your knee even more because they're going to need you more in the long term. And how this Detroit Lions team is set up, I think they will be contending at least for the next 3 years, and you're going to be a big part of that. But even still, getting Montgomery back for the playoffs is a big W for the Detroit Lions. How you feel about this, Sean?
Well, I mean, the potential that he come back for the playoffs obviously is big for that offense, for their running game. Problem is he doesn't play defense. So what it tells me is obviously the sprain, the MCL in sprain was probably not as deep as they thought it could have been. More than likely, he'll have a chance to rehab. I think it's 4 to 6 weeks for the grade that he's at. And then, again, could potentially come back and help in the playoffs. The key for them, obviously, is to, you know, hold on to that one seed in the NFC if possible. So they'll have an additional week where he and other guys won't have to play. But, you know, that, of course, again, remains to be seen right now because Philadelphia is right there. You know, for that, you know, fighting for that one seed in the NFC, and also Minnesota, who has the same record as Detroit, is still in the conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that I think that's going to be the key for Detroit is, you know, can they hold off and you know, be able to, you know, miss that super wild card weekend?
We're going to see what the Lions do. Speaking of, we know we talk about the top of the playoffs. So speaking about playoffs, we got to talk about the other race going on. It's not a playoff race, it's the tank race, you know, because the NFL, you can still tank. They don't care about tanking because if you have the worst record in the league, you will have that number one pick. Right now, we got the Raiders and Giants going on a full-off race. Also, your boy that you like in the draft, he plays the Giants in his first game. He might go off because the Giants not trying to win that game, by the way. But speaking of the Giants and the Raiders, it's one guy that has been on their radar a lot and have been talked about, Shedeur Sanders, who has been pretty much making it publicly clear that he wants to be a Las Vegas Raiders. He's outside the stadium posting videos on Instagram saying legendary. they was at like some dinner in the Raiders play. I don't know if it was a Raider dinner or some with Colorado Buff, but the Raiders people was there. And, you know, Deion got up there and talked next to the Raiders coach, said, make sure you draft a son. The owner was talking to Shador, saying, hopefully I can get you here. So he wants to be a Raider. Yes. But Deion Sanders, you know, prime time, got to always throw a little something on the grease, eat up the skillet even more. So he was on the Pac-Man Jones show, Pac-Man Jones podcast, where they was talking about the draft stuff. Deion said the Giants are not giving up that number one pick. I know that for a fact. He said, and Shador is going to be the number one pick. So it sounds like he expects his son to be the Giants quarterback if they lose out. Now, Deion has openly already said that he will be heavily involved in teams that want to draft Shador. I see like he wanted to go to the Raiders. I don't know if he really want to go to the Giants. Having Malik Labors does look nice, but that Giant line ain't all that well. I don't say that. You see what happened to the last quarterback that was there. So if you should, or I'm going to just say if you're the team, what is the better fit for Shador? The Giants or the Raiders?
I would say today, I think the Raiders are the better fit. Mm-hmm. Part because I tend to trust Mark Davis more than I do the Maras. And after watching the offseason hard knocks with mm-hmm. the Giants, I don't think anybody should want to go there. Mm-hmm. And again, just look at this season and you look at the guys that they've had in that building that have left and are doing really well. When you talk about obviously Saquon mm-hmm. and Xavier McKinney, who's doing very, very well in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. There's some others, but those two come to mind immediately. I don't see anybody clamoring to go to the Giants unless mm-hmm. you have a tie to the Giants. Mm-hmm. There's some history there with Deion and the Giants. So just really quickly. So when Deion was in the draft, the Giants wanted to bring him in for a meeting to their facility. Mm-hmm. And I think they had the 10th pick mm-hmm. or something like that year. And Deion said, I'm paraphrasing, but basically what he said was, I'm going to be gone by the time y'all pick anyway. So, yeah, no. So, you know, that said, I think there are a couple of factors with the Raiders that obviously we can't discount. Number one, Mark Davis, he has a great relationship with Deion. But also, who's in their ownership group?
Tom Brady,
who mm-hmm. is a mentor to Shador. Shador is trained with him, you know, things of that nature. And you can best believe that Tom Brady is going to be a big part of whoever the next quarterback and head coach. If the Raiders change coaches, which again I don't know is necessarily guaranteed, but it's going to be a big part of that decision making process. Mm. Mike Tomlin has a saying: "I want volunteers, not hostages." Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see more teams, particularly when you talk about quarterbacks, mm-hmm. they're not going to draft a quarterback who doesn't necessarily want to be there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a new age. Now, again, I know there's some very old school people who may not agree, but again, mm-hmm. you can draft a guy, he can choose not to sign.
Yep.
These guys understand their options more than ever. So mm-hmm. the idea is if you're drafting a guy, you're drafting a guy saying, yes, he wants to be here. We want him here. It's mutual, and we're going to build this partnership together. Mm-hmm. So I believe if the Giants have the first pick and we're pretty sure they're taking a quarterback, that if Shador Sanders doesn't want to be there, then they're going to look elsewhere.
They're going to go Cam Ward.
You know, Cam Ward would seem to be the name on this. Deion's going to have some influence, but ultimately Deion's not the decision maker mm-hmm. for these teams. These teams have some highly paid employees who are there mm-hmm. to make decisions. And so it'll be a matter of you know, is Deion going to be like John Elway's dad or be like, you know, Archie Manning, you know, in terms of influencing where their sons ended up playing, and more expressive where they will not play, you know? So that's really going to be the key.
For me, I will hate to see another great quarterback coming in my team division. If Shadorius, it 100% makes sense for him to go to the Raiders. You already alluded to what we've seen on the Hard Knocks that show how bad and poor managed they are as a team. It shows. It's nothing you can deny. Nothing you can tell me how bad managed the Giants have been. Even Malik Nabers is already ready to crash out that he's already there. Now, you can make a wide receiver feel better or a player that's skills feel better when you finally get a player, but not as quick as it did with Malik Nabers so far. Because Scary Terry has been with the Commanders for years. I have not seen – he's very happy now, but I haven't seen him outraged like Malik Nabers did that quick. You, like you said, the Mike Tomlin said, you want volunteers, not hostages. Shador has been pinpointing everything towards the Raiders and everything with his style of play and business-wise and mentorship-wise, saying he is a better fit for the Raiders. And I'm going to be honest. Tom Brady was going to be there to mentor any quarterback that comes there. I don't think Tom Brady mentorship really – it's Tom Brady. He's the GOAT. He go obviously get you right. I don't think his mentorship when it comes to style of play as a quarterback is really going to help a Cam Ward more than it will help a Shador Sanders, because Shador kind of fit more of that style of play that Brady was. And with that being said, the Raiders, sorry, like you said, I trust the people up top running the Raiders more than I do with the Giants. The Giants have a lot of other problems. I mean, the Giants got a lot of problems going on all the way around. You let certain players go. Both of them having all-pro seasons that you let, two of the players you let go. The player that you picked over everybody else, you end up releasing him. Then you draft a rookie who's pretty much dying over there already, ready to get up out of there. Then you look at the Raiders. Even I don't know if they're going to still let coach? I don't know why his name.
Antonio
Pierce, blanking my mind. But he still has shown great leadership as a coach. He's shown that he can still have a locker room. They just need a little bit more talent. You lost Devontae Adams, who was at the quarterback at that point in time that they trusted. He ended up phasing out at a point in time. Did you lose Josh Jacobs? So they lost a lot of talent, which they could just re-add more talent to this team, and the Raiders are going to be good. And the Raiders is just as big as a fan base as it comes to the New York Giants. And then you want to talk money-wise, Shador, I'd rather probably go to Vegas than go to New York, because that taxes in New York hit a lot different. I'm not going to lie, hit a lot different. And I say Raiders. And then just as much, now I know people love New York and New York get that love, but just as much as a popularity and a nod that you would get for winning in New York, what you think going to happen when you win with the Raiders? And you're going to get three states worth of love if you win with the Raiders. Three cities, Las Vegas, the Oakland, and of course Los Angeles, because at the end of the day, the Rams and the Chargers are in LA. That's still a Raiders town. The Raiders have been gone from Oakland. That's still a Raiders town. And now Las Vegas has Raiders. It's still a Raiders town. I do not want to see another great quarterback come to my division with my Chargers, but everything makes sense for Shador to go to the Raiders. And shout out Prime, because what Prime truly feel that, like, I'm taking Shador to the Raiders. I'm glad he not publicly like saying it like now to cause up drama. He's just going to wait till it's time and probably be like, Giants, I know y'all not getting on the number one pick. Shador ain't coming. Or you're going to tell the Raiders, hey, man, Raiders go get that pick, so you go get Shador. So we just have to see how it goes. Now another story before we get to our picks of the week real quick. Another day, something Woody Johnson did that makes him look like a bad owner. Now, reports saying that Jets owner Woody Johnson nicked the Jerry Jeudy trade due to his Madden rating. He said he allowed his teen son to influence his decisions. Now, we don't know if this part of the story is 100% true. I don't even care. Because the problem is, like, at the end of the day, we even see the Giants, the guy who's the bad GM, his kids was around asking. He asked, you know, you can probably just ask your son, hey, son, what you think about Jerry Jeudy? You know, just to ask. the problem is, the reason why this story got so big and Woody Johnson didn't look in the mirror is you have been so egregious as an owner that this even feels believable. That's the problem, that people got to understand that it, you have been so bad as a owner that this get, this can either ignite this bad, because it's believable. Woody Johnson, the things have you done with this team over the years, make little things like this believable, how egregious you have been. I don't care if it's true or not. You need to, I hear about that, you need to look in the mirror, Woody, and say, Jesus, if I'm really that bad as an owner, and the answer would be 100% yes. And because it's not even like Jerry Jeudy at that point in time, you know, Jerry Jeudy wasn't having the best time in the Broncos. I feel like he went to Cleveland, rejuvenated his career. He showed people who he really was. So it wasn't like he just missed out. He disrespects some big-time guy. Jerry Jeudy wasn't a big-time guy at that point in time, and the reason why he got traded. The point is, Woody, you, it's very believable that you really will take a Madden ring and not pick a player, which makes zero to God no sense to me. Trash owner, trash organization, equal to trash results. Shout, that's all I got on that. No shout out to Woody Johnson.
My response is five words. Mm-hmm. Stupid is as stupid does.
That's, I can agree with you, Chad, because it's believable. I'm sorry. It's believable, bro. You can't tell me it's not believable. That's sad, bro. But it's time for the favorite part of the show. Oh, wait. You sent me something. Let me see real quick. Oh, yeah. Breaking news. I forgot we did got to talk about this. We do got to talk about this, Sean. Hold on, real quick.
We got the breaking news. Yeah. The breaking news button.
Yeah, we got to talk about this. I forgot to send you this. Yeah, definitely. Hold on, give me 1 second. Let me load this up, because we do got breaking news. We got to talk about this real quick. Shout out, one of the greatest, so we're talking about Madden, greatest Madden players ever created on Earth. The greatest, one of the greatest Madden players created on Earth. Sean, you sent it in. I'll let you take this one. Go ahead. What is the breaking news announcement, Sean?
Breaking news, Michael Vick, former NFL quarterback, pro bowler, as SB mentioned, probably the greatest Madden athlete of all time.
100 overall rating on Madden, since we talk about Madden.
Yes. Officially named the new head coach at Norfolk State University.
Shout out, Vick.
Obviously, knowing, you know, Michael Vick, you know, being from that, the Tidewater area of Virginia, this is a bit of a homecoming for him. And he's even mentioned he's looking forward to coming back home. But I think SB, what this spells is that, you know, these programs who want to be competitive, mm-hmm, on the national level, not just on the field, but also off the field in terms of visibility and things of that nature. This is the route where people are going. I know Michael Vick has worked as like a coaching consultant in the AFL as well, and I know he's done some things with Andy Reid during the off season as a coaching intern, things like that. So not surprising that, you know, this is the next journey for him. Very, very excited for him to do this. And obviously, we're not going to, you know, go over Michael Vick's history. Everyone knows Michael Vick's history. But I think what this is very telling about Michael Vick is, from the moment that he came back home, and again, we're not going to go into came back home, he's been really about being a part of the solution and being very much a part about helping younger people, you know, and this to me is just another platform of which to do that. So look forward to it. Obviously, be watching out for Norfolk State this next year. with Michael Vick as the new head coach of their football team. But SB, I want to get your thoughts on that as well.
Oh, I'm very happy. And shout out to Michael Vick. Proud of Vick to get his opportunity. Shout out Norfolk State. Especially it's good when you come back to your home state. A support from where you grew up from or where you've been around from. So I like that part. So that means Norfolk State, the ball was in their court the whole time. I heard Sacramento State and all that. So that means the ball was in Norfolk State hand the whole time. But I'm very excited to see what Michael Vick does his team. And also what people are not realize, people in college are starting to realize, I give the Coach Prime effect to it too. And now with the Andrew Luck, because now with the NIL and college is starting to feel and giving that NFL type feel, professionalism feel. So the best two things you could possibly get is somebody who understands the NFL concept to run the organization like a professional organization. Cause now college is pretty much coming professional sports. But then also you got to have the guy who have that cultural. People don't really understand the value of this one point I'm going to bring up. Cultural influence, impact. Because as a coach, you got to be able to relate. And you got to be able to lead. And Michael Vick, especially going to the area where he's very much known from and how impact Michael Vick has had over the culture at all. Michael Vick hit the nail in the coffin. Hit it easily. So I'm very excited. I will be catching up some Norfolk State games. And obviously, everybody don't be on my boy crazy. You got with every – Rome wasn't built in a day. Give them time to start recruiting players. Give them time to get people there. Same way like how Coach Prime did with Jackson State. Give them time. Same thing when he went to Colorado. You got to give people time. When anybody take over the organization, you got to give them time. But I can't wait. I ain't never really heard of Norfolk State, but I guarantee I'll probably catch a game or two. I'm not going to lie. And I hope you get a dual threat quarterback there because that'll even set it off. But Sean, besides the breaking news, now we got to get back to the NFL.
SB and Sean NFL picks of the week.
All right, Sean, what are we looking for on the key games and picks of the week? What are we looking like?
So we got 15 games this week. SB.
What's the record, by the way? You know, you got to say the record. What's the record, by the way?
It's tied up. We're tied up 7-7-1 in terms of picks. Mm. Five key games this week, but we're going to get to our picks of the other 10 games before we get to those five key games. First game, Cleveland at Cincinnati. Dorian Thompson-Robinson starting at quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
I'm definitely going to go the Bengals on this one. A lot of teams who know their playoff chances are out of the way. And also, knowing that they're closer to that top pick in the draft, they don't win games around this time of the year. Or they will hopefully try not to. So they might play the first half hard. Second half, they ain't going to be like, man, what happened, man? What's going on? So I'm definitely going to take the Bengals in this situation.
Taking the Bengals as well. Just Bengals again showing a lot of grit and fight over the last few weeks. Certainly may be a little too late for them in terms of playoffs, but their team is clearly showing they're not giving up. So taking the Bengals at home in this one. Next game, New York Giants at the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta Falcons starting Michael Penix Jr. at quarterback.
I hope, imagine. Not to do you like this, Kirk O'Change, because trust me, your agent has taught you well. So I can say this and don't feel bad about it because at the end of the day, you still go get paid, brother. So I can X that out. I hope Michael Penix goes off this game. Now, as I told you, Giants is on that we just talked about Shador Sanders, tank with Shador. So they are not trying to win this game. This is the perfect game to throw. Shout out to Atlanta. They picked the perfect game to throw Michael Penix in, whereas, like, you playing against a team where we can test you a little bit, but obviously a team that's lower tier, ain't really trying to win. So you pretty much just got to go out there and just do your job. And we talked about Michael Penix before the draft where he's one of the best passers in this draft, pure passing alone. So I'm glad. I hope he gets this opportunity to kill, and it's a Patrick Mahomes situation. And he killed for the rest of the season, and you just got to start him. Kirk Cousins is going to have to sit there and just be there. Be on the side, brother. Be a backup and let this young man take off. So I hope he start, finish the season strong, and change the conversation. And then coming into next season, that Michael Penix will be your starting quarterback for the Falcons. So I'm taking the Falcons. And I got Michael Penix at least throwing two touchdowns.
So, SB, just to further emphasize that point, the Falcons have moved on to Michael Penix Jr. He is their starter now and forever.
I feel bad for Kirk. He got paid, and he's still going to get paid. So I can say that and don't feel bad about it. You don't like nobody losing their job, but you're going to get paid regardless, my brother.
Well, that and also, again, I think, you know, Kirk Cousins has to look in the mirror and say over the last 5 or 6 weeks, you know, last few weeks easily, has he done everything he could to, you know, hold on to that job?
No.
And outside of the two Tampa Bay games, the answer is an emphatic no. They were able to win some games in spite of Kirk Cousins not playing well. So that said, you mentioned this is the bright week. The Giants are a dumpster fire. Penix, again, if you're going to start your rookie quarterback against any team, this would be the team. It's not a slight against the Giants, but we also understand what the Giants are trying to do right now. They are trying to hold on to that pole positioning for that number one pick. I'm taking the Falcons at home. Falcons have to win this game to stay in the hunt to try to still win the NFC South. So I'm taking the Falcons at home by 10.
Shout out, Penix. Look, everybody laughed at them for taking Penix. It made sense. They had to get out of jail free card. It was like, oh, no, Kirk ain't going to be the same. Imagine that. Atlanta supposed to be way better than what they is. How they looked at the beginning of the year compared to now. And he the only person to truly blame because he's been awful. He's been atrocious. But yeah, what's the next, Sean?
Next game. Tennessee Titans at the Indianapolis Colts.
This is a game where it's like neither one of these games matter. I mean, you could say the Colts to try to win, but I think it's a little too late. But I'm going to go Colts because they have more to gain to try to win this game, and they're at home. So I'm taking the Colts.
I'm taking the Colts as well. Yeah, I'm just taking the Colts. So I'm not even
The Titans are trying to win.
I'm not even going to argue this point. I'm going to take the Colts at home by 6. Colts had a really rough game last week, especially in the second half in Denver, making some, you know, just boneheaded mistakes and self-inflicted penalties. Expect a bounce back game from Jonathan Taylor this week after his egregious play of, you know, dropping the ball before you cross the end zone, which would have put them up in that game by 13. But that said, I'm taking the Colts at home. Next game, Detroit Lions, the Chicago Bears.
Oh, I'm taking the Lions. The Bears, I'm not trusting the Bears no more with anything till next year. Until we change everything around the staff, coaches, and all that, I'm not trusting the Bears with nothing. And even at home, but nope, you're not doing it. Not doing it. They can't score enough points to keep up with the Lions. Even with the Lions' defense being as atrocious as it is, the Bears can't score enough points. Sad to say, with all the weapons that they got, they can't score enough points. So I'm taking the Lions.
Yeah, taking the Lions as well. Again, I just think Chicago is I can't pick the Bears in good conscience right now. Until they put Ashton Jeanty in a Bears uniform, I'm not taking the Bears in.
They don't ruin that man's career. Don't do that to him.
Yeah. No. He could be the key. So I think, yeah. And the Bears tend to do well with running backs historically. That's all I'm saying. All right. Next game. LA Rams at the New York Jets.
Another team I ain't trusted to pick this year, the Jets. We just talked about how this owner is going off Madden ratings. Well, since we're going off Madden ratings, I believe that the Rams are a higher rated team on Madden. So I'm going to take the Rams.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Rams in this one by 7. Again, team still fighting for something as the Jets have been eliminated from playoff contention. So taking the Rams in New York or New Jersey, excuse me. Next game. Arizona Cardinals at the Carolina Panthers.
Ooh. The Panthers have been playing good against everybody, but I know that the Cardinals, if the Cardinals lose this game, they're out. So they out of the race. So I can see them choking too. The Panthers are one of the teams at the bottom. They like actually still trying to win. They want to finish the season strong. I'm gonna do it. I got the Carolina Panthers in the Cardinals season with this win, right? I'm gonna go Panthers.
I'm gonna go Arizona.
I'm gonna take the risk. I'm gonna take the risk on Carolina. I'm gonna take the risk.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Arizona. I just think Arizona again still has something to fight for, so I'm gonna take Arizona on the road by 4. Next game, New England Patriots at the Buffalo Bills.
I'm taking the Bills. We can move on. We ain't got to argue about it.
Yeah, I'm taking the Bills as well. I think, again, Josh Allen still trying to stay in pole position for the MVP. Needs a good game. It's a division game, so I'm never going to count out the divisional opponent. But I think Buffalo wins in a close one by 3. Next game. Jacksonville Jaguars at the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm taking the Jaguars only because the Raiders are trying to lose. They can't afford to win. That's the only reason why they need to lose. They will probably boo them if they win.
Yeah, I'm taking the Jaguars by 6 as well. The Raiders, again, on Monday night show, they play very tough. They play very tough. I just don't know if they'll score enough points to keep it interesting. So I'm going to take Jacksonville in Las Vegas by 6. Next game, San Francisco 49ers at the Miami Dolphins.
The Dolphins is out of the room. They're still there. It's a 50-50. I'm going to go with the more healthy. I'm going to take the Dolphins because they are home.
I'm taking the Dolphins. I'm going to take the 49ers.
Okay. This is a 50-50 game. This is a 50-50 game. I'm not going to lie.
I'm going to take the 49ers. Somehow, some way, they got to find a way to pull this off. So I'm going to take the 49ers by 2 in Miami. Next game before our key matchups, Monday Night Football. New Orleans Saints at the Green Bay Packers.
I know you're going to pick your Saints. So I'm just picking the Packers. Yeah, go ahead. Say it, Sean. I want it. I've been looking through the archive. I just sit there and look, but I want you to. I'm clipping it today. I'm going to make sure I have it right in the archive. So go ahead. Pick against the Saints, Sean. I'm ready to clip it.
I hope it's a high-scoring game. Jordan Love throws some 5 touchdown passes because I have him in fantasy. Okay. So I'm going to take the Saints by 1 in Green Bay. No Alvin Kamara for the Saints.
You just picking with your heart right there.
Well, no. It's just, my rule. And Spencer Rattler is starting for the Saints at quarterback if Derek Carr is unable to go.
Derek Carr going to be on another team, by the way.
That's fine. We're not complaining. And now we're at our key matchups for the week. Key matchups for the week. First key matchup, real great doubleheader tomorrow. First of our key matchups, Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes has been cleared to play.
I'm very torn on this because, I've been hot on the Texans. The Texans has been good. But the Chiefs, I feel, have no choice but to make sure they finish this season strong. Secure the number one seed. I think they might have, but if they lose out, the Bills win out, because I know the Bills 11-3, the Chiefs 13-1. So the Chiefs could lose out. But also the most important thing is they trying to win to secure that number one seed and then give their starters maybe that last cut thing. Well, we got like 2 more weeks, and they got their next game coming up on Christmas too. So that's gonna be a tough one. So I think they want to win this game. Unfortunately, win that Christmas game, which is going to be very tough with the time frame they got to get ready. And they want to sit their starters for week 18. And so they want to secure it. They got to pretty much at least win this one for sure. And then it depends on what the Bills do. Bills got to win out. The Chiefs at least got to win two of these games. And you want to win these next two. So I'm only picking the Chiefs because one day at home. They're trying to secure this number one seed, and they want to get week 18 off so they can rest all their starters and be prepared. So Mahomes and anybody who's banged up has multiple weeks off. So I'm taking the Chiefs.
This game is going to be a very interesting matchup. The Chiefs offensive line issues, everybody knows, particularly their issues at tackle. Mm-hmm. You got Danielle Hunter, who's coming in, leading the league in sacks. You got Will Anderson on the other side, who I believe is tied for seventh for sacks in the league. Can the Chiefs run the football effectively enough to slow down that Texans edge rush, pass rush? I think that's their only chance to win, given you have a compromised Patrick Mahomes. You cannot ask him to hold the football too long. The Texans know that. So it's going to be a very, very close game. That's I'm going to take the Chiefs only because they're at home. And again, I think they know this is as much a must win as anything for them. But I'm going to take the Chiefs at home by two.
I've been looking at this differently if the Chiefs would have beat the Bills earlier this year, because then now it's like, because you got to worry about that tiebreaker, because the Bills can tie out with them and they're going to take the number one seed off the tiebreaker. So. Yeah, so that's make a difference. But all right, what's next?
Next game, second part of the doubleheader tomorrow. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. No George Pickens for the Steelers.
The toughest thing you can do is play somebody in your division. Last time these guys played this season, the Steelers won.
They won a close one.
And I know the Steelers secured their spot in the playoffs.
No, not necessarily. I mean, they have clinched the playoff spot.
But they clinched the playoff spot. That's what our spot. But not yes. Yeah. I think the Ravens are trying to be a little hungrier, and I think they will want that higher seed, because if they don't, if the playoffs were to start today, they'll be playing the Texans. And they'll be playing the Texans at home. And Texans will be at home. I want to pick the Steelers so bad, and I think the Steelers are going to beat the Ravens again. I really do. But I'm picking against you, Tiffany. I'm gonna take the Ravens at home. This is a must win for them because I think they want to win the division. I really do. So I'm gonna take the Ravens. I want to, but I'm gonna take the Ravens. I didn't want to, because the Ravens been too iffy for me, man. They look great, and then they should be. I mean, they don't ever look bad. They're not looking like how they supposed to look, and that's my only problem with them.
This is a very interesting game. These four teams playing tomorrow, also play on Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. So. I think Baltimore is a must-win for Baltimore, in my view. Baltimore has got to figure out what Pittsburgh does against Lamar and that offense and why they've struggled so much. They have got to figure out how to beat this team. And for me, this is a must-win for the Ravens. Justin Tucker. Points are going to be at a premium. You got to make your kicks. You have to make your kicks. Missing kicks this week is not even on the table. So while I expect Pittsburgh's defense to play really well, I do wonder, will there be enough downfield shots against that Pittsburgh secondary? Excuse me, against that Ravens secondary by Russell Wilson without George Pickens? I know Calvin Austin can fly. But, he's not a 50-50 ball guy like George Pickens is. I got to take the Ravens at home. So I'm going to take the Ravens at home by
three. I would not be shocked if the Steelers beat them again, though. I can tell you that I won't be shocked. Because my mind telling me pick the Steelers. But but they're at home. You see how the Steelers just played against the Eagles at home. So I'm going to trust your Ravens, Tiffany. I'm going to trust them. What's next, Sean?
Next game, Philadelphia Eagles at the Washington Commanders.
Will be another tough, tough close game, by the way. But just like the Lions that we were talking about, who's on a hunt, the Eagles are on the hunt for that number one seed too. And they definitely want to be at home for the whole playoff round and get an extra bye week. The Lions probably need it more. The Lions got the Bears. I got to recheck the last couple of Lions games, but I don't see them losing. But I got the Eagles. This is a must win for the Eagles too, by the way, in a hunt for the number one seed. But also, not going to lie too, this is a must win for the Commanders because they're on the tail end of the playoff spot at the seventh seed. You got the Seahawks and the Falcons, mainly the Seahawks, right behind you, chasing you for that final spot. So I'm going to pick the Eagles. But it's definitely with the Washington being at home, the Washington is definitely more hungrier. I'm going to go Eagles. I'm going to say Eagles.
I'm going to take the Eagles as well. I think a couple things. Obviously, the Eagles' big thing is, you know, the running game, getting that running game going. They showed last week they could lean more heavily on the passing game. I think this week it's lean on the running game, take your few play acts, your shots down the field to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith against that Washington secondary. Washington will have Marshawn Lattimore this week. So, again, will he travel with A.J.? Will he line up on a specific side? That remains to be seen. But I think, to your point, SB, the Eagles need to win this game to stay right there in that hunt for that one seed in the NFC. So I'm going to take the Eagles in Washington by six.
If they try to do that tip for tat, they will lose against the Commanders because the Commanders will put up points. So don't do that. Run that football like you said. What's next?
Next game, Minnesota Vikings at the Seattle Seahawks.
Very much must win for the Seattle Seahawks. Because like I was saying, you're right on the cusp of getting in a playoff spot right there. You're right behind the Commanders. And this, if the Commanders lose to the Eagles, which is a high chance, they down to six. And then the Seahawks win, you know, now you're both 9-6. So now it's coming to a close crunch race. You know, I always go with defense. But with the Vikings kind of pretty much secured their playoff spot, they know they got no hopes of getting the number one seed. I take that back. I forgot they did win 12. I thought they had 11. I thought they was 11-3. So they 12-2. This one tough. Because Seattle hard to be at home. The Vikings have been legit. And Sam Darnold has been legit. That defense is more than legit. MCM too legit to quit. Not to go too old school, right? But I'm gonna take a risk because I know this is I have to win this game for Seattle. They have to win. If they lose this game, they're out. I don't think it's no coming back. I'm gonna take the chance on Seattle because they're at home. Must win for Seattle. They at home. Is Geno still out?
He's cleared to play.
I have to go back and check again. Like, wait a minute. I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to take Seattle.
So I'm going to go government name here. Eugene Smith.
Oh, wow. I would have picked him. I thought she was going to take the Vikings. That's why I picked him.
No. I'm going with the Seahawks at home.
I switched. I give me the Vikings there. I thought you were picking the Vikings. I'm 50-50 on it, so I don't care to switch. So I'm taking – give me the Vikings. Switch it. I'm giving the Vikings. I thought you was picking the – I think for sure you was picking the Vikings. But it's a must-win for both teams.
Yeah, but I think certainly it's far more must-win for Seattle at home, knowing, again, how tight the division is. They have got to win this game this week. Again, coming off a tough one against the Packers last week. They've got to win this game at home. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm gonna take Eugene Cyril Smith III.
That's a crazy name.
To make some plays, you know. But that said, I'm going with Seattle at home.
Okay, I'll take the Vikings
by two.
I knew you was picking. I swear I knew you was picking the Vikings. I was like, yeah. But if it's 50-50, because this game can definitely go either way.
Yeah. Last key matchup, Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football.
We're taking the Tampa Bay. We're going Big Baker. Definitely not picking the Cowboys. No, sorry, Bob. Can't do it.
This is a very a lot of people say, why were you picking this as a key matchup? Mm-hmm. I have to give some credit to that team in Dallas. Mm-hmm. They have continued to play hard in spite of the injuries, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Obviously got a, you know, I did picked against them last week in Carolina.
They've been playing good. They have been playing good. I ain't gonna deny that.
I'm taking Tampa though.
No, you pick Tampa.
I'm taking Tampa. Yeah, I just think you know, the Bucks, the key for this game for me, SB, is can Dallas turn that Bucks offense over enough to give Cooper Rush, you know, more possessions. An opportunity to score. They found some last week with Rico Dowdell running the football. Mm-hmm. Does that continue this week, or do they have to lean a little more heavily on Cooper Rush in that passing game? That concerns me. I'm going to take Tampa in Dallas by 6.
Okay.
And also the Bucs, again, must win for the Bucs to keep that one game lead they have right now on Atlanta. In the NFC South. So I'm going to take the Bucks by 6. But those are our picks of the week.
All right, Sharon. Episode 28 or 128, either way you want to put it. 28, who you got? 28.
I'm going to go two places. I'm going to go Warwick Dunn.
I like it.
Warwick Dunn. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go Adrian Peterson.
I like the AP. Every time we go to this, well, you know, even last time, 28, shout out 28, that's my birthday day. I always got to show this person love because he and the other player that I like, the reason why I'm a Chargers fan, maybe I should have stuck with my heart and soul. Well, over uniform, but I was a kid at the time. I went with who had the cooler uniforms. I liked them both players, but I probably would have celebrated multiple championships by now if I would have picked the team that this guy was on at the point in time. But part of the reason why I love watching football, this player, Marshall Faulk, complete dog. Him and LT made me fall in love with the game of football when I watched them play. Even when I played with them on the video games, I always ran with the Chargers or the Rams. Shout out the greatest show on turf. The Chargers was my team. I just had fun with. If anytime somebody wanted to come, I'm instantly going to get the Rams, Kurt, Isaiah, Bruce, Marshall, Faulk, and I'm blowing you out every time. But I gotta go Faulk. Gotta show Faulk some love, bro. And that one, I got to always. I ain't picking nobody else. It got to be him only.
And I got to shout out two more people just really quick. First one, Daryl Green. Daryl Green, Hall of Fame cornerback, played for Washington for many years. The only person I've ever seen catch Eric Dickerson from behind is Daryl Green. And there used to be a contest back in the day, SB, they used to do the fastest man in the NFL race. Daryl Green used to win it pretty much every year. He was that fast. Yeah, he was a blazer. He was a burner. And the other is Fred Taylor.
Shout out Fred Taylor.
Yeah, Fred Taylor, who had a Hall of Fame career.
Put that man in the Hall of Fame. Stop
playing in Jacksonville. Should have been the first Jaguar in the Hall of Fame. I'll stand on that to the day I die. Don't care. Mm-hmm. But Fred Taylor would be the other one I want to shout out.
Who was the first Jaguar that got put in the Hall of Fame?
Tony Boselli.
Yeah, nah. Hey, you could have put Fred in there. Fred was a dog, by the way.
Should have been Fred or Jimmy Smith before Tony Boselli, but you know.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy Smith was a dog too, by the way.
Yes. So
a dog. But yeah, appreciate you guys for watching another great episode of Real Take Show Fake Babes with SB and Sean Webb. We will see you guys on Monday. Enjoy your football. We got the Christmas game coming up next week. So get Christmas and football. There's a lot of things going on. We got basketball too. We're gonna talk about that more. And then next episode, we got a lot of things that went on too with people complaining about basketball with the media and all that. We're going to talk about that on the next episode. We appreciate you guys watching. This is SB and Sean, and we are out of here. Peace. Real takes over fake debates.